You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Nola knows her knowledge is your power.
So this afternoon, we bring you our segment with renowned consumer journalist Wendy Nola. Every Thursday at 2 o'clock, we tackle consumer-related matters. I mean, we work hard for our money. And when we're not treated with the kind of respect or the dignity that we feel we deserve with creditors, with brands, and all sorts of other suppliers, this as consumers, this is where we come to, in fact, to ventilate these frustrations and issues with Wendy, who's been doing this for many years, being a crusader on behalf of the consumer. And so today, there are a couple of things that Wendy will be taking us through. In fact, we've got three topics for this hour. So we're going to start by looking at a judgment that was handed down in the High Court in Cape Town as recent as last Friday. And if you've ever fallen behind, you know, in car repayments, for example. Let's stay with the car example because that is at the heart of this particular case with car repayments. This is going to be of interest to you because this judge told creditors what is acceptable behavior in his judgment. Wendy, good afternoon.
Hello, Azza. Good to be with you and very well summed up there.
Yeah, it's an interesting case I wonder how far reaching it will be in terms of how creditors behave in future, you know, how consumers, in fact, use it to fight their cases.
Well, as with these cases, it now becomes, you know, it's a case law and other judges will refer to it in coming to their own decisions on whatever matters before them. But in a nutshell, I think it's worth going into the detail, but really what it was saying is it's a speech to those cases where when you fall behind your payments, you're supposed to get what's called a Section 129 notice from the credit provider. In this case, it was Mercedes-Benz Financial Services. And it's supposed to say, look, this is what you owe, and this is what these are your choices. I'll go into a bit later. And then if you've got 10 days to respond, take one of those choices. And if you don't, they can go to court and seek an order. And in many cases, I mean, you take out the agreement on a car years before often, and now you've moved. So the summons and the Section 129, other way around, the Section 129 letter, and then the summons goes to an address where you no longer live. You don't know. The court then goes ahead, and they get what's called a default judgment, which is what happens if you are not in court. You don't make any representations on behalf of yourself at all. And months later, in the meantime, this woman was carrying on paying her installments. She'd missed only three and she'd carried on and she'd kept up. And when she finally discovered what was going on, she said, well, can I just pay the, what, you know, I can pay the 30,000. And they said, well, no, you owe 200,000 and you need to pay that. And then they proceeded to go ahead and, you know, attempt to repo the car. And that's when she went to court and said, it's not fair. And the judge actually agreed and had some very interesting things to say. So her name is Janet. Now, I'm putting that up front because I've had so many of these cases, Azza, where people come to me and say, it's not that I can't afford this car. I just had some bad months. You know, I can rehabilitate. I can pay all my arrears. Why are they taking this car away from me?
Yeah.
And so that's why I really wanted to talk about it. So Janet Juma, the case was Janet Juma versus Mercedes-Benz Financial Services. The presiding judge was Justice A.J. Tulare. And the judgment that Janet wanted to set aside was found in favor of Mercedes-Benz Financial Services on the 12th of November 2019. That's when it was basically, okay, the agreement is cancelled and you know, they can take the car away from you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the car was a used 2013 C-Class Merc, and she was supposed to pay, she paid a deposit of about $22,000, and then she was supposed to pay for 58 months. So it's my maths correct, that's only 5 years, mm-hmm. R4,820, and that was up until the end of September 2023, okay, 5 years. So our deal was, as always, if you sign a car agreement, if you fail to pay, the full balance owing will become immediately due and payable, and then the credit provider can cancel the agreement, repo the car, and proceed with the enforcement or termination of the agreement, which is what MBFS did actually do in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So she defaulted in she missed 3 months. I think it was June, July. She missed, sorry, July, August. She missed. She paid September, and then she missed another one. So three in total, and then she carried on paying after that. So it was just 3 months, about 15,000 rand that she owed. So this, as I said, the notice was issued by MBFS saying, you know, you've got 10 days to act. You can go to a debt counsellor. You can go to a consumer court or an ombud. You can try and resolve any dispute or develop a plan to bring the payment or agreement up to date. In other words, to make up the arrears, which she would have done if she'd got that notice, one assumes, right? But she didn't get it because she'd moved.
So that's the section 129 with these alternatives,
yes,
that you have 10 days to action one of these things, a debt collector, an alternative dispute resolution agent, or go to consumer court or the ombudsman. Okay.
Yeah, and you have 10 debt counselor. So you can go under debt counseling. 10
okay.
days. And it was such a tragic case, Azza, because she had moved out from the address that they had for, as her address. So she'd moved from, it was a Heathfield in Cape Town, just two weeks before that notice was sent to her by registered mail. And then she got the summons served at the same address, and, you know, she didn't see either of them. Mercedes-Benz Financial Services blamed her for not telling them that she had changed her address. And she said, well, she had to move in a big hurry. And also, when you tell a company that you've got a new address, you have to submit legal documents, you
proof
know,
of
municipal
address.
Account.
Yeah, yeah.
Official, it's not just, you know, just a letter. You need to prove it. And because she was so new in her house at the time, she didn't have that. She hadn't submitted it. So she, as I say, she'd only missed those three payments, June, July, September of 2019. Up from September 29, she carried on paying as normal, and she was up to date except for those arrears of about 15,000 rand on a five-year contract. So she actually paid the December installment, even though they'd already got to court by then. And the judge put it like this. He said she'd skipped the months referred to because of a temporary financial slump, but knew that she was going to catch up with settling installments not paid and continue to pay the monthly installments in terms of the agreement. So he's drawing a distinction between, you know, very tragically, as we know, especially with COVID, your circumstances change so dramatically that you cannot keep up your repayments on your car or your home or whatever. And then, you know, best you sell it yourself, but otherwise, the bank is going to come and say, listen, we're repossessing you. You have no hope of fulfilling your obligations. But this was not one of those cases, according to the judge. He said it was quite clear. And she only knew that this default judgment, because she's now merely paying, right?
Yeah.
Even after the Section 129, because she didn't know it had been served. She keeps paying her 4,000, forget what it was, 4,820 or so every month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. And she only discovered that this judgment had been taken against her in late November when a sheriff of the court phoned her about repossessing her car. And that's when she called her attorneys and said, look, I'll pay the 30,000 rand I owe in full. And they said, no, the judgment's already obtained. The attorneys, we will only accept, the only way to get your vehicle back is to pay the entire agreement sum of 200,000 rand. Now, who has 200,000, you know? And so the judge said, Janet alleges that it was once she became aware of the judgment and the attitude of the Mercedes-Benz Financial Services to her offer that she instructed her attorneys to bring a rescission application and an urgent application to stop the removal and the sale of the vehicle. And that urgent court authorized the removal and storage of the car, but not the sale.
Mm-hmm.
The car was never sold on auction, right? So in the end, she got it back, but only after this long court thing. And she said if she'd been aware of the notice, she would have acted on her rights and you know, started negotiating a payment plan to keep the car.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, she missed it by 2 weeks, her moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a tragic case. Anyway, so last
But she
Friday
had the chutzpah to take this on. She had the, you know, to go to court and say, no, I've spent all these months paying this car. And
I can carry on paying.
I can.
No?
Just 3 months of a shaky moment would mean that just goes down the drain. And she,
exactly. Car gone. I think, that was very clear that the judge had huge empathy for her situation. I did try and track her down. I just couldn't. I did some Googling. I just couldn't find her. I would have loved to have had her on, maybe on another show if I managed to find her. But
But Wendy, let's do this. Let's take a break. And then after that, you're going to break down what the judge said,
Sure.
And then we'll look at how this sort of plays into future cases or future failures of repayment and Section 129s. So let's take a break and then we'll conclude this particular story after that. But if you have been in similar situation or you have questions around, you know, repossessions or failure to repay for car installments, as you listen to this case, you can give us a call on 011-883-0709.
702. Nolan knows.
We're taking your calls in this hour as we look at consumer matters with Wendy Nolan. So far, she's been telling us about the case of Janet Juma versus Mercedes-Benz Financial Services with Presiding Officer Justice A.J. Tulare. And we'll look at what the justice had to say regarding this case. But in essence, Janet just went through a patchy couple of months where she wasn't able to pay for her car installments for 3 months, a 3-month period. And then a default judgment was taken out against her for lack of payment for those months. And so the financial services provider then started a repossession process. They issued a Section 129, a default judgment was taken out against her, and it was delivered to her home, to the address where she used to live, but she had moved just 2 weeks prior to that. So she didn't receive this particular judgment. And so it was only once the sheriff got in touch with her that she became aware that this process had been started. And so Wendy has been looking at this judgment and looking at the criticism that was leveled against creditors by the judge in his findings, because Janet took the matter to court to set aside this judgment. So Wendy, what did Justice Tulare have to say?
Okay, so he said, think about this. By the time Mercedes-Benz Financial Services obtained the judgment by default in Janet's absence on the 12th of November, they had received her October payment, and they started the process in September already. So she's now still paying. So what do they think? The money's being received, but they say nothing, about that. Mm. Anyway, about her payment history. And they were very aware of her offer to settle the outstanding arrears, which equaled 3 months of installment. But, they had rejected the whole thing. The judge said the facts set out if proved would negate a conclusion that she was unable or unwilling to meet the standard of servicing the monthly installments as agreed until settlement of the total outstanding amount. The facts suggest that she failed to pay in terms of the agreement punctually in a specified financial season. It was not a failure which was high enough in terms of the amount and period to warrant Mercedes-Benz Financial Services to terminate the agreement and obtain return of the vehicle without allowing her an opportunity to remedy the default despite her offer. It may be found that the disposition and sale of the vehicle was harsh and disproportionate under the circumstances. And then it's so poetically put. He says the divisions of the past, which the preamble to the Constitution instruct and urge us to heal, includes the great divide between credit providers and credit consumers. Section 129 of the National Credit Act is one provision in the greater scheme of the legislation through which the nation should navigate the deep, narrow gorge with steep sides to make it through the kloof of bargaining power in credit agreements. Unless courts are deliberate in their judicial output, a contest between chronically unequal financial beings will always result in the authority of the powerful, irrespective of the quality and the state of their case. But that was very poetic. And he says, by disregarding the voice of the consumer, but not their payment. So they carried on receiving the money, even though they terminated the agreement. Once that Section 29 notice is issued, until they secure a court order, credit providers appear to be selfish and maybe greedy in securing their interests while being cold and aloof to that of the consumer.
Wow.
And the crux is, and this is what is going to stand as instruction as a case law for other cases such as this, should they be litigated. The time has arrived where credit providers who request judgment by default should also indicate what response, any, so in other words, the banks, what response, if any, the Section 129 notice or the summons elicited, or what payments, if any, were made from the moment the Section 129 was issued to the date that default judgment is requested. Right. In circumstances like this one, the Janet Juma case, where the credit provider alleged that the agreement was cancelled at the issue of the Section 129 notice, but continued to receive payments more is expected in that report to the court, considering judgment by default. In other words, we judges need to know the full picture here. Do not keep it from us. Consumers cannot continue to pay monthly installments where the light of judicial oversight did not streak for want of disclosure in the request for full judgment, with the belief that the payment is in fulfillment of terms of an agreement. So in other words, the poor Janets of the world thinking that they're still paying and, you know, settling what they owe to the bank. Meanwhile, the credit provider knows that the agreement is cancelled and the consumer still suffered the indignity of dispossession of the assets purchased. Where a consumer has made payments, believing it was payments in fulfillment of the agreement, where the agreement was cancelled and such cancellation was only known to the creditor, such receipt seems to me to be a receipt under false pretenses. Basically, yeah, mitigation of damages and transparency, especially a frank and candid disclosure to a court called upon to determine the request for default judgment, are not mutually exclusive. Courts should ensure that the bad tendencies, practices, and cultures in debt recovery, especially hasty and unnecessary dispossession of properties which are subjects of credit agreements, do not remain a living, stubborn heritage in the history of consumer credit when considering especially judgment by default. And with that, he rescinded the default judgment of the 12th of November. And I sincerely hope, and I'm pretty sure Janet has since got her car back, or given that it's not quite a week, maybe that's still in process. But
yes,
I just found that such an interesting judgment, Azza, and so instructive for other people in this position, because I've seen it often. You know, they miss one or two, and then it's like, sorry for you, get two, three strikes, you out. That will pay. We'll pay the arrears. No, you're not going to pay the arrears. You're now going to pay the whole lot. And this judge has said, no ways is that actually fair.
Yes, so this is especially hasty and unnecessary disposition of properties.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
So it's, to be fair, it's not where people have haven't paid for a few months and cannot possibly resume payment according to the agreement. Then obviously the credit provider can't just say, oh, shame, sorry, just keep the cards, fine, we won't ever seek payment from you. Obviously that's not going to happen, but it's in cases like Janet's where it was a little oops for a few months, rehabilitated, offered to pay all the money that they owe, that they didn't pay in those 3 months, and then it's just like, no, actually, sorry, too late. We'll take your money, actually, but the agreement's gone. We're repossessing the car. Sorry for you. That's the scenario that this is, and it's not uncommon that this judgment really speaks to and helps, should help
The consumer's thinking, I'm rehabilitating myself, reestablishing this relationship, getting it back on track. But then on the other side, the agreement is cancelled, and yet we're still we're going to take your money and you know, act as if all is well. But yes, they had communicated the judgment, tried to send it, but spot on about still taking on this money. And why not? Why not allow consumers to be able to rehabilitate that agreement within reason, of course, within
it's
reason.
Better for everybody.
Yes. Yeah. As you say, better for everybody.
The one big lesson I think we should just get in before the news, as I is, it shows also how very important it is when you change address to let all your credit providers know, so that they have your current address and cell phone number if you change that on their records. So there's no excuse that, oh, we tried to get hold of you and we couldn't. The onus is on us to make sure that they have our correct contact details. So just a note, if you've moved recently or got a new number, you must tell your credit providers.
It may have worked for Janet in this case. It doesn't mean it'll be your get out of jail card if you neglect to notify creditors for change of address. We'll come back to this and continue with the other topics for today. It's 2:30.
702. Nolan knows. Her knowledge is your power.
23 minutes to 3. Right. Wendy, we've got some reaction to the conversation we've been having. There's a question for you about whether or not it's likely that the credit providers will insulate themselves against this happening again by making debt more costly to their customers. Amy wants to know.
I'm not quite sure how to answer that, because the two sort of ones at the beginning of going into the agreement and the other ones at the other end when you're in the agreement and now you've defaulted. I don't know what they mean by that, because What she means by that, because it's, you know, it's quite a competitive thing in terms of what the various credit providers and what deals they offer. So they would then price themselves out of the market if they, you know, increase the interest rates or whatever. I'm not quite sure how to answer that, as you can probably tell. I think the point is that it's a warning to the credit providers not to do what they did in Janet's case, and hopefully as well to empower consumers to know that that's not okay, to take action if it does happen to them.
Okay.
I've intervened in a few cases and had some success in getting the court action stopped, but obviously one little consumer journalist here and there can't really make a difference, which is why this judgment is so helpful.
Okay.
And so important.
Yeah. One says both the Credit Act and consumer legislation says the onus is on Mercedes in this case to make sure that she received the document. It's unlawful by them to force her to court. Actually, after 3 months, that debt is written off by the insurance. I don't know about that. Just like buying a house and you die, that house is paid off by the credit insurance. No.
That's two separate issues.
Two
there is credit
different
insurance
matters,
if you've
yeah.
had it out. You're talking about prescription, which is actually
yes,
3 years, and it
not
doesn't.
Mm.
Yeah, and it doesn't apply. It certainly doesn't apply to a home loan. It could apply to some other debt, but this wasn't at play in Janet's case at all.
Oh, that's convoluting a few things. Yeah, incorrect.
Yeah.
Mandla in Midrand. Hello, Mandla.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. Welcome, Mandla.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us a voice. I've been very frustrated and I had nowhere else to go. And I can imagine that a lot of people who find themselves in my position at this point, are really frustrated. And
what happened, Mandla?
I'm really distressed. 2017, I was released from my job via retrenchment. I've not been employed since. I then applied for a W process where all my debts were restructured, right? So I had a vehicle that I bought in 2012, and I went into the debt review process in 2016, which was 4 years after having purchased the vehicle.
Yeah.
And the bank restructured the debt started the contract from afresh, meaning then I was owing the bank again for another 5 years.
Right?
To pay the car for another 10 years in total between the two contracts. And because I was surviving off, doing a small job here and there, that got distracted with COVID, so I could no longer make any income. So I surrendered the vehicle to the bank and said, look, I'm no longer able to make payments, therefore can I kindly, surrender the vehicle to you? The bank, but prior to that, I had gotten independent buyers to come and evaluate the car. Both independent buyers evaluated the car at 90,000 rand. My shortfall was about 120,000 odd store. So I realized that that I'm making a loss. So I have a shortfall that I'll have to carry. I then took the car to the bank. Got a notification that the bank evaluated the car for 37,000, which didn't make sense to me because the other independent buyers had already evaluated it at 90,000, and I understand they use the same retail book, retail value book. So I asked the bank to give me their evaluation report. It never came. I kept on calling. Eventually, I got to somebody within the bank who said, you know what, you would sell the car at fair value. The evaluation amount was just, for us to get a starting bid price. And I said to him, look, I have independent buyers willing to buy the car at double what you guys are offering me. So I'd rather give those people an option to buy the vehicle. And on the day that I had the conversation with a person in the bank, the very same day where I received an email from them saying, you should not worry, we will sell the car at fair value. I got an email saying your car has been sold at auction for 67,000. Shortfall 85,000. I've been paying for the car 9 years right?
Oh.
And now I'm being told I must make an arrangement on the shortfall of 85,000 rand, which means I'll be paying the car for the next 10 years or another 5 years.
No.
And I took the matter to the Ombud. Okay, Ombud said, no, let's refer the matter back to the bank. The bank responded saying, look, we have followed due process. But I said, no, there's collusion within the bank because I've requested information was not given to me. There's so many things. I got a recording where one of the bank members called me to say, don't worry, we will rectify, we will write off the debt, and I've got all those things on record, right? Presented those to the bank. The bank then comes back and says, look, it's not our fault that you have not been able to keep up with payments. Mm. It's not our fault that you went into debt review. It's not our fault that you surrendered the vehicle to the bank. You've actually signed all documents to say that you can't pay. Therefore, the car has been ceded to us. We have every right to sell it for whatever amount we want. And I said, but that can't be right because, you know, you have denied me one, the report that I asked for. You have again denied me the opportunity to sell it for a better price to an independent buyer. And you had given me in writing an assurance that the car will be sold at fair value. This was a 2012 Audi A4 2-liter with an automatic gearbox in a beautiful condition. I kept it because I knew I could no longer afford to buy another vehicle.
Okay.
So I took care of it.
Just to be brief and in the interest of time, Mandla, you've unpacked your story very clearly and eloquently. I think we have a full picture at the moment. What is the question and what is the is there, you do need further assistance? What is the question?
I need help. I'm just going to put it bluntly.
Regarding the 85,000 rand. That they say
regarding the process that the bank has followed. At auction.
Okay, man.
I feel that they played within the loopholes or within their mandate, but sold the car for a value that I think even if you to go in online right now and look for a vehicle that age with that,
you think it would take for more? All right,
for 60 grand, there's just no way.
Okay, Mandla, okay. Wendy, let's hear.
Let me jump in there.
Yes,
So first of all, the case illustrates why if you're in trouble with your repayments, it pays to sell the car yourself before the bank comes to you with a, well, voluntary surrender. You sign and the car goes. Often the terms of that is misrepresented by the agent that comes to collect the car. They'll say, well, just keep it for safekeeping, and if you pay in the next whatever, it'll be fine, and that kind of thing. And so you sign, and it's a voluntary surrender. It saves them having to get the sheriff of the court to go through that whole formal legal process. But once that happens, once you give your car to the bank, you lose your option to sell it privately for more. The banks, the cars are notoriously sold for very low prices on auction. But in terms of your case, you said you have everything documented where, under the circumstances, a bank official said we will sort of make a plan about that remaining 85,000. Look, you were going to have a shortfall even if you sold it privately, but there was some undertaking to reduce it. If you've got proof of that and you have got the energy to document your case, Mandla, speak to our producer, get my email address, and I will make an approach to the bank. If you can send it out as clearly as possible, that will help, because I will add my comments. And as I say, any proof that you got that where the banks sort of said we could come to an agreement to lower your obligation for that 85,000 rand, I think your case is quite extreme given how long you've been paying for the car, etc. I mean, and, you know, to still be paying another decade on a car that you've now lost, it's just, I don't think the punishment fits the transgression in your case. So I'm really willing to have a look at it because I think it's an extreme case and what comes of it could be quite instructive. So please do send that email if you can.
Mandla, I'm passing you back to my producers. Please do that. Okay.
Thank you.
That's Mandla in Midrand. And let's see. Oh, he's a man who needs relief. Such a long time paying for a car. Similo on Twitter said the gent who paid the car for 9 years held onto it for too long. And many consumers do the very same thing. There's so much we can learn out of this. And let's see if there's any kind of conclusion as Wendy will be getting involved.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
702. Nola knows her knowledge is your power.
It's 10 minutes to 3 o'clock, and we've got two more things to touch on this afternoon. When it comes to pain relief, Wendy, we often turn to these heat patches, but there's something we need to know about them or remember in using them.
Yes, exactly. So almost a year ago, November last year, on our sister station, Cape Talk, we did a show on quite a few people coincidentally came forward to tell me about bad experiences they'd had with a brand of these pain-relieving warming patches, heat patches, you know, the plasters that you put on, sticky plasters. There is a chemical reaction in them as you apply them, and which creates heat and is then relieving of muscular pain, that kind of thing. And the brand in question was Dr. Lee, and one man in particular had he pulled off a layer of skin when he took that plaster off. Others had not quite, you know, the photos were hideous, didn't have quite as bad a reaction. Manufacturers say, you know, we don't get injuries, and, you know, people with sensitive skin shouldn't use them, et cetera, et cetera, and the labeling, and nothing really came of it except, you know, we spread awareness around the fact that this could be an issue. And then a week or two ago, a woman by the name of Tammy Richards contacted me. She wasn't aware of that particular show that was done about the Dr. Lee ones, but she said she was in some pain in a sort of torso area, and she went to Clicks and she bought their own brand, so-called odorless warming pad product, and she applied it to the painful area, and she said it actually did a really great job of relieving her pain, but the problem started when she removed this plaster, this patch, 6 hours later. She said, I had a scratchy, funny feeling, assumed it was from the sticky tape that was stuck to my skin, put some tissue oil on it, but soon the site developed large blisters that were really ugly, and when they popped, it was sort of like, you know, that raw skin, really not pleasant. She said she emailed me after a week because she'd been interacting with Clicks, but at the head office as well as at the branch level, and she didn't feel that they were taking the issue seriously. Okay. She'd said they should be removed from shelf. So I took it up with Clicks. I included photos that Tammy had sent me and a link to the Cape Talk show of last November. I asked whether Clicks had received any other such complaints about that product, and what I always like to ask companies this: what do you consider to be a fair, reasonable, and appropriate response to Tammy's complaint? Mm. They came back to me to say, we take product safety extremely seriously. We use an ISO 13485 medical devices certified supplier for the production of Clicks odorless warming pads. Batch release tests are also performed on the temperature delivered by those warming pads. We've been in contact with Ms. Richards. We've apologized to her for what happened. We have taken a full report from her, and we've refunded her what she paid for that product. As for whether any other consumers had bought the product and complained of something similar, some kind of pain or injury to their skin on pulling the pad off, I was only told it's been well received in the market, with over 43,000 units sold in the past year. So there wasn't a direct response there, a little bit of a dodge.
Yeah.
But here's the important bit, and, you know, I do take my hat off to Clicks for this. However, says Clicks, purely as a precautionary measure, we have taken the decision to remove the product from our shelves for investigation. Although the product contains specific warnings to not place it on sensitive skin, we will also provide expanded warnings on the correct usage instructions so that it is clearer to our customers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's not quite the same thing as investigation, so I don't know if they're going to relook at the labeling and do some other tests on, you know, what possible results or impact on the skin this product can have. But Tammy says she's visited 3 Clicks stores this past week, and she didn't find them in any of them. So they've acted, and I say well done.
Yes.
You know, they're not admitting to any more than this one case, but I think, as a precautionary measure, it's certainly, it takes quite a bit to remove, you know, products from, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of stores they must have, but it's a lot. They acted fast, and I think, you know, good response, definitely.
Absolutely.
A good response there. And just be aware, if you've, you know, if you've got sensitive skin, if you're very young, very old people, not advisable, you know, the skin gets very thin. I certainly wouldn't use it because I know that my skin wouldn't react well. So just to be a little cautious around all brands that, you know, that there have been some cases. I don't know, I can't say how many percentage-wise, but just to be aware that there have been some issues. And if you Google it, you'll see in other parts of the world, there have been some reports as well.
Right, so sounds good. There's a recall while this investigation goes on. So hopefully they'll come back to us and give us feedback about their findings regarding the odorless warming pads. But good effort in removing them off the shelves, and maybe some other users listening now will be able to keep us informed if they see them, or if in fact they've had adverse experience with the odorless warming pads, the in-house brand from Clicks. Wendy, thank you so much. We're out of time for today. We'll have to touch on the online shopping issue next week, unfortunately. But we're out of time.
Just a little. Yep. Okay, Azza.
Thank you, Wendy.